I get old a bit. Okay. So that's the format this morning, and I've got a few questions here, and for somebody who's only supposed to be speaking for about 10 minutes, I've got an awful lot of papers as well. So what would be a real blessing was to find that I'd actually got my notes. Yes, yeah, I've got some notes. Okay, now, let me read to you the advert for the triathlon that's going on at the moment over at Bowood, okay? Following a 1.2-mile swim in Bowood Lake, athletes will embark on a spectacular single-loop 56-mile ride through the Wiltshire countryside before completing their epic journey with a three-lap 13.1-mile run through the Bowood Estate. Now, I'm going to make a little adjustment to this. Crossing the finishing line of the inaugural Outlaw Half Bowood, goodness me, that was not written to be read out loud, was it? They will then be told to start again. And then when they've done that one, they will be told to start again. And when they ask how long this is going on for, they will be told nobody knows. Okay. Now, just a couple of weeks ago, somebody suggested that our experience of the pandemic, we thought it was going to be a short run, then we thought it was going to be a marathon, then we were told it was going to be a triathlon, and now we're still being told nobody knows when this one is going to end. Keep on going. Now, that's what's in our mind this week and next as we try to orient ourselves a bit towards the topic of faith. Now, faith is important at any time. Anybody just think of why it is that for disciples faith is so important? Very difficult to be wrong in your answer on this question, but why is faith so important?
It's trust.
Trust?
No.
Yeah?
Hope.
Hope?
When the wheels come off, it's something.
When the wheels come off, it's something there. But if the wheels stay on and if life is going well and if we're seeing all we hope for, it is still possible not to have faith, and we know that without faith it is impossible to please God. Now, some people have a need-centered view of faith in Jesus, okay? They became Christians because there was something that they needed because their life was in a mess. But if you stay at that point, then you ain't a disciple. Because disciples follow Jesus. And you know, it was okay back in the Old Testament where we hear about this bit about I will be with you, the Lord says, I will be with you wherever you go. But if we stay at that level, then that's not great. Because the ideal is that we should be with him wherever he's going. Yeah? That's what makes a disciple, being a follower. Okay? Now, that's what I want to talk about this morning. Let me read the bit of the Bible. And I'm going to put a bit on the front of it, which I think is quite helpful. This is Matthew 8. When Jesus noticed the crowd around him, he ordered his disciples to go to the other side of the lake. Okay, guys, over there, we're going to the other side of the lake. Lake, it's not the Bowood Lake, is it, you're talking about here. Apparently, it was Lake Galilee, and I'd really love to go there. is about as long as Windermere, but it's about seven times wider. It's somewhere between the size of Loch Lomond and Loch Ness. It's not the biggest lake in the world, but it's pretty big in UK, in our understanding. And of course, it was a pretty dangerous lake as well. It was surrounded by hills, so the winds could whip up and could turn over small boats, just like very many inland waters. But he said, let's go across the lake. Teacher of the law came to him in the middle of this and said, teacher, I'm ready to go with you wherever you go. Is there space for me in the boat? Yeah? Not a bad thing to say. Jesus answered him, foxes have got holes, birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lie down and rest. Interesting in what's coming up. Another man who was a disciple said, sir, first let me go back and bury my father. Follow me, Jesus answered, and let the dead bury their own dead. I assume that his father hadn't already died. That what he meant was, look, I've got family business I've got to sort out. So that's the context in which this is happening. So Jesus got into the boat. Bear in mind, he's already said he's got nowhere to sleep. He must have been feeling tired. Suddenly, a fierce storm hit the lake and the boat was in danger of sinking, but Jesus was asleep. The disciples went to him and woke him up. Save us, Lord, they said. We are about to die. Why are you so frightened? Jesus answered. What little faith you have. Then he got up and ordered the winds and the waves to stop, and there was a great calm. Everyone was amazed. What kind of man is this? They said. Even the winds and waves obey him. So, storms. The plain sense of this story is really about the power of Jesus over nature. But it's also a story about faith. Four of these guys, at least, were experienced sailors. Most of them had got experience, even the tax collector, I guess, of going across the lake to collect taxes. And they were in a state. Jesus was asleep. In Mark's gospel, it tells you he'd got a pillow. He may not have had a place to lay his head. Well, he was lying, wasn't he? Because he'd got a pillow at least. He'd got nowhere to put his pillow. Perhaps, so he slept in the boat and he was asleep. These guys were bothered and they were experienced sailors. Now, when Jesus wakes up, he says to them, well, you disciple guys, this is quite understandable. I am sorry that you haven't been able to rest, but come unto me, all you that labour and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Nope. And this is one of the things I think we need to think about when we discuss. Why did Jesus so often give his disciples a really hard time? And particularly a hard time over this issue of faith. On one occasion, he actually said to them, he called them a perverse and wicked generation because they prayed for a kid and he wasn't healed. On another occasion, he told them that they were lacking in faith. And here in Matthew, he talks about them being of little faith. Okay. Now, earlier in the chapter, he talked about to somebody who wasn't a disciple, somebody I think who was a foreigner, as having great faith. Jesus never told his disciples that they had great faith. Here he tells them they've got little faith. Now, let me just mention something. We've got time to do this, I think. This is something I really love. When you get three stories in the Gospels in the New Testament, it is really valuable to compare them. It's a proper job, actually, doing comparisons and You know, so there are books and books and books about it. So, New Testament, just put to one side. I know that Margaret reads detective stories. I know lots of you like crime on telly. And you know that there is a fix going on if all the witnesses come in and say exactly the same thing. Yeah? They've got their story sorted. And of course, the kind of people who get their story sorted beforehand are crooks. But plus people where teamwork is really important and you stick together. So the military and the police would be typically the kind of people who would get their story sorted out. Now, although the disciples were a team, it's quite clear that they never did emphasize getting their story sorted, because you've got Matthew, and Matthew says, "You of little faith, why are you so afraid?" That's what Jesus said. And then Mark says that Jesus said, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" And Luke says, "Where is your faith?" Okay? Now, if you think about it, it would be quite possible over a couple of minutes with the storm going on, Jesus to say, "You have little faith, why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? Where is your faith?" You know, he could have said all of those things, but it could have been the way that different groups of people heard it, bearing in mind that neither Mark nor Luke were actually there and heard the story from someone else. But here's what's going on. Now, I think I have heard these words. "Do you have no faith? Where is your faith? Oh, you of little faith," quite a bit in the last 18 months. And I haven't felt bad about it. And I haven't said, "Lord, how could you treat me like that?" Because I want to please God. And I know that faith is critical. I also know this, that as it says in the last chapter of 1 John, this is the victory that overcomes the world, even your faith. And I don't know about you, but I feel as though the way I have lived over these last 18 months has been more about fortitude than faith. Okay? It's been more about courage than about confidence. And I do not want to live like that. I don't want to live as though, "Oh, well, even if I die, even if nothing good ever happens again, I'm going to keep on keeping on." Now, that's okay. That's good. Courage is a desirable characteristic, but it's not enough for us to live as disciples. Okay? I know it's a bit tough, but guys, I'm talking to me about this because I want to follow Jesus more in more areas of my life, and I know that I need to live by faith. I know that faith doesn't come from me. I know that it's a gift of God. So, here we go. Faith is not the same as fortitude. It is not the same as courage. Faith is knowing that God is taking you somewhere and that it's going to be okay in the end. All right? That's what it's about. I can't afford the time to say any more about it, and I'd only get myself in a muddle anyway. But that's where it is. And as we come into this winter, and as the problems of life stack up and they come back again, as you guys get to university, then having courage and being determined to keep on sticking it out is great. But knowing that God has got a purpose is even better. Now, of course, if you've got faith, you still need perseverance. I would find it so much easier to have faith if I didn't need perseverance. because then I could receive faith from God on a good day. My issues will be resolved on a good day. I could sort of bounce along the bottom through a bad day. And the next time I had a good day, I could believe God. But essentially, perseverance is one of the things that comes with faith. In fact, we're told not in Hebrews, aren't we? Not to throw away our confidence, not to throw away our faith. We're told in Galatians about don't give up doing good, because in due season you will reap if you faint not. And I don't know how many translations that's a mashup, but those of you who read your Bible know that. So here's my final thing I want to say this. Says this, and I'm going to repeat this afterwards. Did these guys learn their lesson? Well, if the ultimate test of having faith, which it seems to be from this passage, is being able to sleep in a storm, then they did. In fact, they taught other people as well. You know, you get Peter in Acts 12. One of the team has already been killed, had his head chopped off with a sword. Peter, who's a dodgy character, is isolated. He's chained up between two guards. And what is he doing? Because he's due to go into court the following morning. Is he worrying? Is he thinking about what his last meal's going to be? No, he's asleep. And an angel has to come. And the revelation of an angel isn't good enough to wake him up. He has to tap him on the shoulder. Guys, that's the kind of faith I aspire to. Not the kind of faith where if I wake up during the night, I worry about whether I'm going to get back to sleep again because I'm worrying about worrying. Yeah? Hey, that's my measure. You may say that's a bit extreme, but that's what I need, guys. And I think that's a worthwhile goal. And then, of course, you've got Paul. He took some time to get to the sleeping thing, but at least he was able to sing praises to God and have earthquakes. But by the time he gets to Acts 27, he's learned the lesson of pillow or not, wherever you are, being able to sleep in a storm, which became a testimony. So it is possible, and the measure is, can you sleep through a storm? Not because you're in denial, but because there's faith. Okay, look, I've got some questions, and we'll break it out in this way. If you four guys can go towards the back, then you can shout at one another, appropriately socially distanced, yeah? In terms of grouping. And if here we could split into, how many are 2, 4, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. I think you can probably, as long as you manage to separate fairly well, do it in two groups. When I say separate fairly well, it means that just that you'll be able to hear one another. And we've got 10 or 15 minutes. It'd be interesting to get back afterwards just so that we can pray. So 15 minutes, there's three questions, and there's time available at the end. Sue, have you got to rush off this morning? Okay, well, you lead one of the group, so gather yourself seven people. And if Peter, would you mind, through your cold and your mask, if you could gather another seven people. Okay, and John, if you wouldn't mind, with your group down here, that'd be great. Okay, so if that's it, and just turn your chairs around, come and join in. I'm not going to allow you to pick teams because we'd always be worried about who would be the last person to be picked. A group's already forming over this side. If just shuffle your chairs around here, guys. If Steve, you could come in. You've got, moving the chairs. Yeah. If you guys are mobile, could you up to the corner? Yeah.